Hey guys, it's Matt here, and I got a story for you. When I was a kid, I was playing hockey, and oh man, there was this one year, this one team, we could not beat these guys. They were all over us. They were competitive games, though. They were tight, but we just could not beat them. And I remember the last game of the year, it was up against this team, and we were gearing up. We were like, we have to get these guys. When we won that last game, it was so satisfying because we finally got the victory over the team that had dummied us, that had dominated us for so long. I think this is the same thing with sexual brokenness, with sexual sin, where there's been brokenness in our lives and the enemy has come and taken ground and he's dominated us for so long, but we get to make a difference. We get to be part of a message and a mission of freedom. It is such a cool opportunity. So I want to invite you, men and women of any age, to be part of the Action Squad. The Action Squad is something that we're putting together right now. We're looking for 100 people to be on the Action Squad. There's going to be some competitive nature to it. There's prizes. And we're going to work together to help produce a documentary that is literally going to change the world. We're featuring stories of sexual brokenness, of people who have been restored and redeemed, reconciled to God and to people in their lives. And we're going to feature these stories in this world-class documentary that will be a resource for churches to host movie nights, for small groups to watch together, for families to watch and be inspired by. And it's going to highlight the problem in the church, but also show the power of God that is at work when we bring this stuff to light. And so if you want to be part of the Action Squad and help us put this documentary together, I would love for you to go to restoredministries.ca/action squad. You can watch a 10-minute video there that I put together on what it can look like for you to join us in this mission and be part of putting this documentary together. So restoredministries.ca/action squad. Hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Pure Victory Podcast, full of hot tips to help you win at sex, conquer porn, and find purpose in staying free forever. Here are your hosts, Matt Klein and Braden Hafner.
Hey, welcome back. Pure Victory Podcast, part two with Jonathan Doherty, Be Broken Ministries. A great leader in this area of helping people get free of porn and sexual sin. He's got his own story, and the Lord has used that. And I actually like what Mike Novotny said too, just a couple weeks ago. The devil must be ticked. The devil must be ticked that he got me into porn. And now God's turned it around and impacted so many people. That's the case with Jonathan. So great to have you on, Jonathan, for part two.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, us too. Last week, we discussed a little bit more of the grace-based approach through dealing with, you know, individuals, churches, families, when it comes to addiction and other kind of sexual behaviors. But this week we wanted to talk about what happens when a married couple goes through some betrayal trauma, whether there's been porn discovered in the marriage, maybe other behavior that stems out from that. What does a couple do? Because it can be hard to rediscover maybe what was lost, maybe some of that trust, rebuilding that. Maybe a little bit of the friendship that's hard to regain. And then even just to be able to have fun again as a couple, once you've moved from that discovery to maybe walking on a healing journey, how do you come back once all that trust has been maybe eroded and now you're trying to rebuild?
Yeah. Well, let me just put a disclaimer right up front that there's no way we're going to be able to fully answer that question in the amount of time we have in this short podcast.
Right.
Because that's a big question. You're talking about a big deal mm-hmm. in a marriage. I mean, we're talking about the most intimate relationship that God designed on purpose, because it's meant to be a picture for our most intimate relationship, which is with Him. And so He takes it very, very seriously. And because of that, there's serious ramifications to what happens when that trust is broken through a sexual betrayal of some kind. Because the only relationship in which God encourages and sanctions that sexual union is in a marriage relationship. And because it's so valuable, because that is so precious to that relationship, when that gets violated, I mean, that's a huge fissure that cracks through that entire relationship. Yeah. So the first thing I wanted to say is it's so important that the couple deal with the seriousness of that. So before we can ever get to, okay, what are some of these restorative elements look like? there is a need to actually examine and analyze what is the damage that has been done. Because there's going to be that's going to take quite a bit of time in order to unpack. Because when the truth finally comes out of whatever has been done regarding the betrayal activities, that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of whatever has been underneath or hidden to that point. And so you can't just deal with only what just came up, like, okay, there is the discovery of porn use on a Thursday night by a wife of her husband, and somehow assume this is the singular one data point that has ever occurred in my husband's life around pornography. No, there's likely a long history there. And there's a lot of things even underneath the behavior itself that contribute to the brokenness. So all that to say is there's going to be a good long time of just even some individual work that each spouse in the couple is going to need to work on.
Yeah, because then it uproots in the wife's side too, a lot of her stuff too, yeah, right?
That's right.
Exactly. So yeah. For the betraying partner, there's going to be a lot of need to dig into, okay, what are the underlying factors that are contributing to the behavioral outcomes here? And what needs to happen maybe from a recovery standpoint, healing, dealing with all of that person probably has trauma in their own history. And then the betrayed spouse is going to have to deal with the trauma of that betrayal. And like you said, Matt, sometimes that's even going to bring up trauma from her own past. And so there's a lot of work that needs to go on there. But if we can kind of move a little bit beyond that to the point where we're looking at a couple now that is saying, we are in a restorative posture. Like, we both want this to work out. That's key. We both want to move towards restoration. And so both of them are on those individual journeys of healing and growth. And now they're looking at each other and they're saying, we want to rebuild this thing, this marriage that has been broken. At that point, I think a lot of times what happens is there can be this, because of the seriousness, again, of what you're seeking to repair, there can be such a soberness about that, which is important because you want to be serious. I mean, you want to say, hey, we can't take this lightly. We can't think this is, trite. Unfortunately, what sometimes happens, though, is you can get locked into a mode of seriousness that now everything in the relationship is heavy.
Right.
Like, everything is serious. Like, why are you cracking a smile? Do you have some kind of devious thought in your head right now? I mean, just everything can kind of have that tone of seriousness. And so when you're trying to re-engage in various aspects of the relationship, it's important to take breaks. And what I mean by that is sometimes literally saying, you know what? We're going to schedule some light time this Friday night. Like, we're going to make it a date night. And what I mean by light time is this is not heavy time.
Right.
We're going to block off 2 hours here where it's not saying we're ignoring the seriousness of our brokenness. It's not saying we're never going to revisit these conversations. But can we agree together that for 2 hours on Friday night, we're going to choose to do some things that are just outside of the realm of the heaviness. And that's where you can start maybe letting some creative juices flow, where both of you can start having a conversation of saying, okay, what do you want to do in the light time? What would you want to do? Now, at this point, I would say that it's usually best if the betrayed partner gets to be the one to set most of the pace around kind of the rebuilding of some of these more fun, light activities. It doesn't mean that the betraying partner has no voice or has no say, but I've been doing this a long time. And generally speaking, the betrayed partner is going to move at a much slower pace in terms of feeling comfortable or safe to be able to even engage what I'm calling light times. So I think they need to be the one that's willing to sort of take the lead on what are some of these things that they want to do? What are some of what's the pace look like from their standpoint? And then just kind of set some parameters of what does that time look like? Can we make some agreements? And one agreement is if either one of us gets triggered in that period of time, we can state it and say that we're going to deal with it outside the light time. So it's okay to bring that up. It's not saying we've got to ignore our feelings in the moment, or we've got to ignore, you know, something that's going on in our own minds, but can we state it and revisit that? Because I think it's, you're kind of relearning how to engage one another mm-hmm. through a redemptive lens, through a new lens. I like to put it this way. In many ways, you are rebuilding a new marriage with your old partner.
Right. Yep.
And so you got to be able to kind of state that up front and say, okay, we got all this baggage that's come out, and my goodness, it changes the view of everything. But can we start to reengage what our new relationship with each other can look like through a new lens? And so I think the first thing is letting the betrayed spouse be the one to really set the pace. I got a few more things, but I'll pause there if you guys have any questions that you want to ask to this point of what I've been sharing.
The only thing that I'm thinking about, I just want to hear more of what you have to say, but I'm thinking, what if a spouse, especially the betrayed one, is just like, I just can't be light. I just can't do it. Or they get triggered. They're like, I just can't stop thinking about it. At that point, what advice do you give?
I think it's okay to take a break even from light time at that point and say, okay, what can we do for the next 5 or 10 minutes to just help you feel safe? Let's take a look at it. What happened that really caused, you know, made you feel triggered? Do we need to go somewhere else? Would that be more helpful? Just the betrayed partner at that point can really step in with an empathetic ear and be able to, because if it's not one of those things where, because usually it's going to be the betrayed partner that might feel the triggers. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the betraying partner can't feel that, but a lot of times, like you said, it can feel almost like you're asking me to disconnect from reality for 2 hours. And the reality is our life sucks and this is really hard. And so I get it. And I can already hear most of the women responding to what I'm saying and saying, oh, what a man. Yeah. Compartmentalize, just, you know, click out for 2 hours. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, let's start to make some attempts to try to bring ourselves into a mutual relaxed place, a mutual safe place, a mutual place where we can just do a fun activity that we've agreed upon that doesn't have to be totally consumed with all of the other seriousness of everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think there does need to be mutual agreement to what you're going to do. That being said, little sidebar caveat here, if you're the betraying partner, it's going to be to your best interest to just say yes to whatever she's willing to do. Because that's a huge step. That's a huge step for a betrayed partner to say, you know what, I'd like to go see a movie on Friday night. Mm-hmm. And if the betraying spouse says, yeah, but I don't like the one you picked, that's a foolish move, man. Don't do that. If she's willing to go out and do something fun, go do it, yeah. You know? And so, but to your point, Matt, if then there's a trigger or whatever, I think it's okay to pull out of that for whatever the need is. If it feels like I can't keep going with the fun time or the light time right now.
Yeah, that's great. Well, and Jonathan, I'm curious, because you mentioned you had some more thoughts on the point prior. Love you to continue. What you were discussing there.
Yeah. So I think the other, another aspect of sort of trying to rebuild is especially around maybe trying to engage one another in a way that's more fun or just re-engaging some desired activities together is try to explore both old and new interests. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes what can happen with a couple when there has been betrayal is both partners, both spouses can start to almost just with one broad brush paint over the entire history of their relationship.
Yeah, right.
As if 100% of it was absolutely awful and evil and terrible.
Right. They recreate their past. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it can feel as if the only way forward is 100% of everything we do from this point forward has to be brand new. And that's a lot of pressure mm-hmm. on both spouses, because it's almost as if they're saying, I can't even contain anything of my own personality moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to be able to kind of take a breath and go, can we revisit and look at some things that really were even maybe some initial things that brought us together, some shared interests, you know, what were some shared activities that we had that we really enjoyed? Maybe you both liked riding bikes, or maybe you liked going on trips to certain places, or maybe you loved going to the zoo. I mean, just there could be different things that you were like, those were significant parts of our shared interests that even brought us together in the first place. So maybe be willing to revisit those, looking through a new lens and saying, we can still do some of those old activities, but in a new way. But at the same time, I think it is important to challenge yourself and say, what are some things that could be part of our new story, part of some new activities that we're going to do? And in some ways, those can become very, very precious because they're almost like tokens. Like, wow, this is a token that we can look at of saying, this is a result of the new relationship that we're building with one another, that now we're doing these activities together that we had never thought of before, or that were never part of our relationship before. So I think it's important to integrate a revisiting of the old through a new lens, but also pressing forward to some new activities that you could share together. Like, for example, in my own relationship with my wife and I, we were separated for 9 months during the big blow up of everything that happened. And when we started after that, when we started to rebuild our relationship, we always love to go on road trips and go through, especially old towns that have like old architecture, and then trying to meet up with locals and say, okay, what do you do for fun here? What do you recommend for food? Well, we were able to start re-engaging that, but with a new lens, like a recovery lens, like, hey, we're able to do this from a place of more openness and honesty and transparency with each other. I was more willing to share more of my feelings about these things because I was finally learning how to know what my feelings are.
Even that you had feelings?
Yeah.
And that I had feelings, exactly, which that was a discovery in itself, right? But those are some ways that then we were able to re-engage, and that has become... that still is a precious part of our relationship.
That's cool. I just love that it's like God redeeming those things, you know? Yeah. It's him redeeming them and even making them better, which is what he does. So I love that you didn't just throw it all out.
I think one of the keys of doing that is, are you engaging, are you talking to each other about the activities? Because, you know, it's, I think especially for men, and I know everything kind of operates in a bell curve, you know, when you're talking about some of these things, but I think a lot of times for men, there's a doer mentality. Like there's an action, like what's the outcome? Give me the bottom line. You know, what's the objective here? And so sometimes guys, a lot of times can start engaging these activities as if, okay, the goal is, okay, we're going to go on this trip and we're going to do this thing, or we're going to go ride bikes, and as if the activity in and of itself is what's repairing the relationship. Instead of going and saying, hey, you remember when we were dating and we took that bike ride up into the mountains, would you be interested in doing that again? And then when you're doing the bike ride, be willing to take lots of breaks and enjoy the scenery and say, hey, how are you feeling right now? Mm-hmm. Like, what memories is this bringing up? How can we make this a new memory? Just be in the moment and actually be processing the moment in the moment. That's a whole new way of likely engaging those old activities that before you might've been doing the activity, but you might've had an ulterior motive when you're dating because you just want sex or whatever. You know, it's like, there can be all kinds of things there where now you're processing it through a healthier grid, like where you're saying, hey, I'm wanting to try to be relational even in these activities that we enjoy together.
Mm-hmm. And that's so great. One thing I'm picking up on what you're sharing is there seems to be a very clear thread of intentionality in all of this. And I heard it put recently in marriage, there's two pathways. There's the choice pathway and the drift pathway. Pick which one you want to go on. And so in this regard, obviously there's an intentionality to reconnecting, rebuilding this new marriage. Can you just comment on that? Like, what does this, I mean, well, every couple's unique, every story is unique, every couple's different, but what's kind of the intentionality that we need to have here? Because it can be difficult if you're the betrayer to try to push this. And at the same time, if you're noticing that nothing's happening, but also if you're the betrayed, it can be hard to kind of come along for the journey because you're hurting. So, you know, well, how does intentionality work in all of this?
Yeah, I love that. And that's where, you know, a lot, there's just a lot of time and conversations that are going to need to be had. That's one of the things that I think is, it may be one of the hardest things about rebuilding a marriage that has been broken by, you know, sexual betrayal, because there are such raw feelings on both sides. A lot of times the betraying partner has a tremendous amount of fear and shame in their ineptitude as a relationally skilled person. And so they might feel a propensity to say, it's more natural for me to just keep my mouth shut, just put my head down, do what I need to do to try to be responsible and faithful and good and all this kind of stuff, and sort of quote unquote work my recovery and all that. And for the betrayed partner, there's also a lot of fear, doubt, and then they are probably feeling like, I don't have enough outlets for all the words that I want to say, all the things that I need to process. So that being said, it's so important. I put a little more pressure on the betraying partner because that's what I'm familiar with personally. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my background. Usually it's the men that I'm dealing with, and I feel like I can kind of lean into them a little bit harder on this issue and say, hey man, you got to step out. But the intentionality is not for an outcome of fill in the blank with whatever activity it is. The intentionality is for connection, and mainly for connection, for understanding. Mm. So even as we've kind of jumped to, okay, how can we start doing some more shared activities and some of these things? And that can be really, really good for just body, soul, mind, all of those kinds of things. I think the intentionality needs to be in terms of the repair of the relationship of our goal is to connect so that we might better understand one another and then keep going on this growth journey. And as part of that, then as you're having those conversations and you're feeling those points of connection and there's a lot more vulnerability and honesty that's going on there, now you might be able to talk about revisiting some of these old, you know, enjoyed activities or doing some things together. You could also start to maybe dream a little bit more of like, you know, I feel like we've hit a mile marker here. You know, that's the first time in however long that we've been able to cry together tears of joy. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, how can we mark this moment? Let's go get an ice cream. You know, I mean, it could be something as simple as that, but like also doing things that are celebratory along the way. When you feel like, you know, we've hit a really important moment here. What can we do to celebrate that? And that's an intentionality in and of itself. So I don't know if that's answered your question or not, but that's some things that pop into my head about what does that look like about connection for understanding and then trying to celebrate when you've had successes along the way.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love it. And it's biblical too. It's when things happen, have a marker there, set up an altar and it's something to remember it by. Otherwise it's the trauma and the exposure and the betrayal that is the big thing. And we remember that. But when you set up markers for celebration, that gives us more memories and it even like highlights from an emotional standpoint in our brain to go back to that and remember it, which is pretty cool. So in your own story, like, I don't know how you were with this, but different men are like, hey, I feel decent. Like I've come a long way. I don't have secrets anymore. My wife's struggling. They're like, can I smile? Can I tell a joke? Right. Did you go through that? And if you did or didn't, doesn't matter, but can you speak to that? Like if a husband is like, I feel free, I feel better, but my wife is struggling. How does a husband navigate that?
Yeah. So I sometimes joke that I'm bilingual. I speak English and sarcasm. But I would say this, sarcasm can be extremely dangerous. Yeah. When you're trying to rebuild a relationship, this does not mean that there can be no banter. There can be no joke. And every couple is different in terms of the dynamics and personalities and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But when it comes to some of the lighter side of language, I think you really have to be careful as you are moving along. It doesn't mean that there can't be moments where, you know, for instance, let's say, there was because all of us in our relationships at some point, we develop an inside language, right? We develop little quips or little things that have been part of our relationship that we can say it to each other and nobody else has a clue what we're talking about, but it reminds us of something that was in our past.
Yeah.
Those things, I think, if properly positioned, can be beautiful, redemptive elements mm-hmm. to the healing process. But I would just say, especially for the betraying partner, be careful and sensitive, because words, if you think about it, especially for the betraying partner, you've likely used words in your past that were absolutely deceitful and lying and hurtful, maybe even manipulative. You've used words that to cover up what you were doing. And so you've got to be extremely, back to what you said, Brad, intentional. Mm-hmm. Like, are you being intentional with the language that you're using? But I also think, as we've been talking about, how do you rebuild kind of some fun and, you know, just kind of get back to those elements of your relationship? I think it's okay to laugh. Certainly not at each other, mm-hmm. but I think it's okay to laugh. And sometimes you may come across something that is funny. You know, one of the things that my wife, now we're at a very, very different place in our relationship now than we were 25 years ago, you know, but you know, we'll see a stupid or funny meme on Facebook or something. And it's like, oh my goodness, I know she would love that. Or I know he would love that. And you know, even though you've gone through a lot of brokenness in your relationship, you really do know your spouse better than you think. Even the betrayed partner, feeling like, I don't know this person because they've had all these lies. Even the betrayed partner, you actually know your spouse better than you realize. And so as you're going through this healing process and you see little things that you know, I know they'd appreciate that, or that'd probably make them smile. I think those are good things to share. And then maybe talk about it. I do think language is one of those things, especially, that we got to be careful about because of how powerful it is. I mean, words really are powerful.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Jonathan, too, through the journey of this, the process and journey of walking as a couple through this, how would you recommend a couple deals with their frustrations through the process? Because sometimes there's setback. Like, for instance, maybe a fun event was able to be enjoyed by each other. And then something triggers, maybe the betrayed, and now they're set back maybe another 10 steps. And then the one that maybe, like, say the betrayer now feels frustrated and feels like, how do I talk about this? Because I feel really frustrated here with what's going on here. I feel like we should be at this point, you know, how do they share that? And then the one that's betrayed, same thing. They might feel like, well, I'm actually suffering in this moment. I don't want to share though, because I feel like maybe there's some headway happening here, but at the same time, I'm kind of hurting still. So how do you talk about these things? Because sometimes there's a little bit of a fear, right? As a couple, to be able to start sharing about some of these inner feelings and emotions, because you feel like you're going to inflict more damage.
Yeah, it's a good question. And here's, you know, as human beings, we can't help but create expectations around everything, right? We have expectations for ourselves. We have expectations for our kids. We have expectations for our marriage. It's all these kinds of things. And especially when you've come out of a deep place of brokenness, it's so natural for both spouses to create expectations of what they think this thing should look like, of how long it should take, of what the other person should be doing, you know, all of that. And much of that doesn't get communicated verbally. It's thought, or it's just kind of almost subconscious of what the expectation is. So I think it is important to have those conversations. Now, this is where I think a lot of times a counseling environment can be helpful, because you can have kind of a facilitator of those conversations to be able to draw out some of that language that needs to come out around your expectations in a safe enough environment for both the betrayer and the betrayed. But I think there's a big shift that has to happen of the overall expectations of a couple in this situation. I mentioned it in our last podcast, where we talked about really needing to get on a growth mission. We applying mainly to recovery. I think that's true in life and in relationships. The destination, the journey is the destination. is really one way to put it. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard sometimes to kind of cognitively accept or focus on, because we want to say, no, the destination is the destination. Like, the expectation that I have is what this should look like. But I think part of growth, especially when you think about, okay, we had this major blow up in our marriage and we're now trying to repair this. Part of growth is having a new expectation that says, growing and maturing from this point is me not trying to actually get back to something that was in the past, but actually moving towards something that I don't even know what it is yet. Mm-hmm. So you've got to hold all of it loosely, because you may have one partner that is trying desperately to get back to what they thought was the ideal time in their relationship. You have another partner that says, no, everything's got to be new. And they've got in their mind what that new destination looks like. And so you've just got to have a lot of conversation about those things. And when those trigger points come up, this is where counseling again can help, to maybe even be able to have some safe words. Or, you know, like my wife, when she was wanting to really, in those early months and years, wanting to check in with me, but knowing how sensitive I could be to like firing off some kind of, hey, what are you doing? You know, instead of, it's like, you know, it might've been a good day for me, but just a question could just fire. I could spiral after that. Right. So we had kind of like a trigger word for us. That was the word was goofy. I could handle that. And my wife would just say it in a gentle way. Hey, anything goofy happening lately? And I could receive that. I could handle that. It was, and yet I knew, what was that telling me? She's feeling vulnerable. She's wondering. And this is another thing I think that couples have to work through, is being able to say, how am I seeing the other person? Am I really seeing them? Because so many times in our own woundedness, everything gets self-focused. So the betrayer is saying, why isn't she where she needs to be? And the betrayed is saying, why doesn't he care about me? And there's all this self-focus that is not seeing the other. And so that's another part of that growth, is being able to say, if the betrayer or if the betrayed is asking the betrayer how they're doing in their recovery journey, is the betrayer willing to see that as an invitation to move toward her and realize there's something that feels unsafe in her, rather than the betrayer going, don't they realize that I've been doing all this hard work? I mean, I've been sober for 6 months. I mean, you see what I'm saying? So there's a sense in which both of them have to start being able to see the other. And from that point of empathy, then you can really start launching into some of these other things we've been talking about rebuilding fun and doing these fun activities together and kind of building the new relationship together from that point.
Amazing. Amazing. A lot of wisdom, Jonathan. A lot of wisdom. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. Just quick, where's your marriage at now? It's been a long time, but where are you guys at?
Yeah. So we've been married for 28 years. And like I said, we've got three kids and all of them are grown. And so we're in kind of this interim transition season, launching these adult kids and figuring out what it's like now to have our marriage in that state of transition. Overall though, man, it has been so good. And what I love about where we're at right now is the little things really are little. You know, it's funny. I joke with people about how I feel like I'm really the dumb kid in the class when it comes to marriage and maturity and all this kind of stuff. Cause I often say it takes me 10 to 15 years seemingly to figure out what some people can get done in three when it comes to marriage and relationship. But we are in a good place now where I feel like there's an ease, not saying it's easy, but there's like an ease and a rhythm. And we can share truly anything with each other that's built again on that foundation of the grace of God, and that we understand who we are. And we also have learned that our goal and our purpose in life is not to have a great marriage. Our goal and our purpose is actually to glorify God, mm-hmm. and we get to enjoy marriage. Right. And that's a huge shift for us.
Yeah.
Because early on, I think some of the other peripheral problems in our marriage, other than my unfaithfulness, was that we were looking to marriage to be something that is only reserved for God. Mm. And when we got that rebalance right, man, it has unlocked the gates for us to really be able to enjoy our marriage in a perspective that says, hey, you know what? You're not supposed to complete me and you're not supposed to complete me. It's like, but we can enjoy each other and we can live this whole life together. And it's awesome. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
That's great. I'm going to quote you on that, Jonathan. That's a great, charge to all of us. And that's such a great kind of point to kind of end this particular thing. Because we could, I am sure, talk for so long about this, but we so appreciate your insight, not only because the wisdom that you've gained through ministry, but your life. And there's such hope through what you've come through and that you're turning around and helping others now. And that's powerful. I think that is something that we can really connect to and we all can connect to listeners as well. So thank you so much, Jonathan, for being here with us today.
Yeah. Well, it's been a joy. It's always fun to connect with like-minded folks who also want to get on that growth mission and make the journey the destination. So I appreciate what you all are doing.
Yeah, you bet. And you listeners out there, I encourage you to go to BeBroken.org, see the resources that Be Broken has, that Jonathan and his team has put out there for men, for wives, for families, churches. There's courses, his podcast, Pure Sex Radio, a lot there. So I encourage you to check it out, and there'll be info in the show notes too. So God bless, and we'll chat next week.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to hear more, please visit purevictorypodcast.com to subscribe. This podcast was made possible by the generous donations of our subscribers. If you would like to help support the cause financially, once again, please visit purevictorypodcast.com.